Hi, everybody. Welcome back. This is Julie Bates with the podcast, Training the Pointing Labrador, episode number 307. And today's, I hope, applies to everybody that owns a dog. So even though I'm going to use applications that are in regard to the hunting dogs and competitive training and retrievers and things, the aspect applies to anybody that has a dog. And it's about what communication, what the significance of communication is between you and your animal. So I don't know how much, like I say many times, people think about this, but it's actually something when I watch people and help people that one of the biggest aspects of them that I really, really address, or at least get people to think about. So there's not the right way, the way that you must do it. But there is a way to think about it and be aware of the significance, because we all know somebody that if you go, oh, hey, Henry, how are you doing today? You are going to hear 15 minutes of stuff that you really didn't want to hear, because Henry really likes to talk. And so given an opportunity to talk, Henry will talk. Now, I've often wondered about those people in the world that are that way. What are you thinking about my interest level? Because I would assume, when I talk to you guys, I hope I'm giving something that is of, at least of some interest. Otherwise, you won't ever be coming here again. I really hope that. And so if I'm talking to you on the street, I'm not going to launch into something in which you have no interest. But Henry doesn't think that way. Henry feels very good about doing all the talking. And it's that rewarding pleasure he gets is why Henry talks a lot. And what I've found is that the way we communicate with our animals is primarily just a function of what we like to do. And then you factor in, this is how I like, you know, I'm a chatty, or I never talk, or whatever it is, I like, you know, whatever you have, whatever your type is. And you couple that with what you've been taught, if you've been taught anything. Many people that have been trained by dog trainers, you know, this is how you do, this is what you say, this is the word you use, and all of that. And so that they're trying to do that, and then they couple that with what their tendency is. And that's generally what we do with our dogs. As opposed to putting yourself into that canine brain and trying to figure out what is most effective with that dog. Now, that begs a question, right? Well, how on earth do I get into a canine brain? I'm just me. I don't know anything about that. And the answer to that is that's something that you can't just be told. Just like that, I told you, you need to get into your dog's brain and figure out the best way to communicate. Okay, how do we do that? Just the same way, and I'm going to use my human analogies, this is the same way you have a kid. You're a teacher, you had a kid, you are the kid I'm talking about. Okay, they're all different. And if you're going to teach somebody something, if you're going to teach somebody math or history or something that is important, right, if you just began to do what you feel comfortable. I want to give a 30-minute lecture, and I'm going to cover these points, and I'm going to do this. There's their opportunity to learn. But you got somebody in there who, one, just has never really learned to focus or pay attention, or is limited with the ADHD stuff where they just cannot focus and pay attention for other than little spurts, or you have someone who is somewhat disinterested in what you're saying, or you have someone that you're trying to teach that doesn't like you, etc., etc. All the things I can come up with. So given all those situations, you're trying to teach this young person something, or someone's trying to teach you, there's a way that they can be most effective, and then all 10 million ways where they will be far less effective. And it is the same way with dogs. If you go into the dog world, just pack of dogs running down out around the wherever, African plain. We got some wild dogs out there, right? When they make noise, it is to communicate something very specific. They can be growling in warning. They can be growling in fear. They can be barking to alert. They can be making these noises, but they are all significant. And when everything is kind of kosher, they don't make noise. They communicate primarily. Noise is a part of what they do, and it's usually when there's something fairly serious one way or the other. And then the other times they communicate with their body language. You know, and there's so much to dog body language. You don't have to be like an expert. I mean, you can be. Go study, read about a bunch of stuff like that. Then you get other people's sometimes odd interpretations. So you have you and your dog, dogs, whatever you have. Their body language is often very telling. Sometimes when you first start looking at it and somebody goes, oh, look at that dog, they're afraid or they have anxiety. People love that one, anxiety everywhere. But because we have it, so now we put it onto our dogs. But and you're looking at the dog body going, I don't know, looks to me like he's just standing there. The way that you learn what dog body language is basically by paying attention and correlating things. Gee, every time this dog has to do something really hard with me, the shoulders kind of go down, the head drops a little, maybe the ears are down, maybe the tail is down, or maybe it's something else. Every time I start this, he yawns. So dogs don't, there's not like one reason dogs yawn. I see that all the time, you know, on the internet or somebody going, whenever a dog yawns, it means this. Whenever they turn a circle, it means that. And it's like, no, it may, or it may mean something else. So you study dogs with correlation and see that and begin to tie when certain situations occur, the dog has this appearance or behaves this way or takes this action. And that's how I've learned it. That's how everybody I know that's good at this stuff has learned it. You got to pay attention and correlate things. If you're just, you know, got your dog butt out and going to start something and you never notice that, you're never going to be able to take that language and react to it, which is what you do when you're training a dog. So, that said, hold on a second, I gotta. That's something that happens every day, whether you're just hanging out with the dog. That's something that's just very good to notice. What does your dog do when they see another dog or interact with another dog or whatever? I talk about that one a lot. Out in the regular dog world, somebody sees my little tiny dog and they just get wildly excited and want to do something. Okay, that dog is going, I want to do this. That's all that's in their mind. And their owner is fighting that instead of going, I need to change what they're thinking. But now we're getting into training. I'm not going to do that. We need to learn what our dogs are telling us oftentimes so that we can understand, wait a minute, I'm overpowering this dog or I'm boring this dog. Or when dogs look away, you know, people of the interpretations people have for that are amazing. They always anthropomorphize on that one. They're looking away, so they're bored. Well, maybe they're looking away because you're not requiring them to focus in and stay with you. That's your fault, not theirs. Or maybe they are trying to make this go away because they don't like it. So if they look away, maybe it will go away. There's a lot of things. You got to learn which one of those things it is. And again, it's just correlation. If you make assumptions, that means this, then okay, then maybe you'll be right, maybe you'll be wrong, and you'll wonder why there's problems in the relationship or in what you're trying to do. Now, the other part, I've talked about the dog and their communication. Now there's ours. So we do, like Henry, what we do oftentimes is exactly what we like to do, exactly what our character is. If you're a big talker and you chat a lot and there's always things that are wanting to come out of your mouth, then when you interact with your dog, there's always going to be a lot of things coming out of your mouth. Now, whether that's good for what you're trying to do with the dog or not is another issue. But if you feel comfortable, therefore we're good. So I have seen many people with their dogs basically have a conversation. You know, they've got sentences and phrases and tonality go up and down and this and that. And they just have a running conversation with their dog. Or they just talk a lot. They give a command over and over and over and over. They change commands. They do this, that. And just like in this podcast, if I'm talking to you and I kind of droning on a little bit, or just kind of rehashing the same point over and over, and then just I lose you, right? I just lose you. And so then this becomes boring for you, and you're like, I'm not going to get in a hurry to hear the next podcast that she's got. Okay, our dogs are the same way. When we make a lot of noise and none of it is terribly significant because there's just a bunch of it, so you don't really know what the point of this is, we teach them to fundamentally ignore us and look for something more interesting. That is almost always the original problem people have with dogs. I've seen this a lot lately, people that work with their dogs, and they're trying to teach them something that they're working on. And the dog looks away or faces away, and they wait. They wait until the dog returns to the exercise. So I guess I'm not sure what that is. Because if you do that with a dog, if they kind of tune you out, you don't look at you while you're handling or while you're doing some obedience work, they, you know, look at the far distant horizon where there's something happening. Okay, we don't wait for them to come back, because what you're teaching the dog right there is, you know, this is on your focus time. You just come in and out, and I'll just wait and respond to when you're ready to do this. That's the best way to teach. And what you're teaching is, you know, if you don't like it, just kind of lean out, and I'll just let you. Okay, you can't teach anything when the dog is actually being taught that you are not something very significant. Nor do you keep their attention by talking and talking and talking. Because just like when Henry, you ask Henry how he is, and then 10 minutes later, after his great aunt so-and-so did something, you're in another place. You're thinking your own thoughts. How do I get out of this? That's exactly similar to what a dog is thinking. So communication is important. Now I'm going to get to some specifics on that. Now, if we like, and I know this is a very popular thing in training all over the place, the vocabulary, the lot of words. And I've said in some of the old podcasts, I said when people would come and start working with their dog that I had trained, and obedience is the first thing, I have to get the relationship and the communication established with any dog that I am going to teach things. And so I have to have a shared language and a relationship that is clearly understood. Okay, so I'm going to go into that first, thinking that way. So that's the first thing I do. And so then when I show them heel sit, here the stuff that we do, and they want to know exactly what words to use. And I've said this a lot of times. People that know me have heard this one. It's like, it's about the words, yes, but it's about the relationship between the two of you. It's about them believing when you say sit, that they have to sit. So it's not like, and here's the maybe one of the key points I'm making in here. This is not a dog bot. Just remember yourself in early math class or history or something that was just not fun or difficult or boring to you. Okay? It's not like, okay, you will now learn math and I will do this and now you can do any math thing. It's not like that at all. I mean, you're sitting there going, oh, this is boring, and your mind's on something else, and do I have to take this? Well, is this the last one of these? There's all this stuff instead of you're not really learning math. And so it's very important that you step into the world of that dog and understand, right, that you have to establish a relationship of, oh, I'm going to say respect, where they go, okay, gosh, I need to listen to you. Then when you use the word that they've been taught and you show them that you also know what it means, right? Now we're getting somewhere. But everyone just assumed if they barked out anything I said that the dog would do it. And that is not understanding how a dog is, just like a kid. I've always said that. You have a real demanding good teacher, and you know, and they pay attention, and then you get a substitute, and they don't pay any attention at all or learn anything. Whose fault is that? You know, it's the nature of the kids. Oh, I don't respect this teacher. I'm going to do something else entirely. And dogs are the same way. So our communication with them is, the words are important. Single, clear, consistently used words. But the more important thing is they understand they're supposed to listen and do their best effort to respond. And you do not do that by being a Henry and talking and talking and talking and talking and mixing a bunch of commands and stuff, because a dog brain, is particularly in the teaching stages, just doesn't work that way. And if you think of this dog as this thing that must respond to the word that you said, okay, it's the same thing as, all right, I got this kid, they got to learn math. All right, kids, sit down and learn this. Maybe that'll work and maybe it won't. So being aware, one of the dogs, what's the relationship? Most important part of this communication, how you want to interact with your dog, is all depends on what relationship you set up. If you set up one that's somewhat antagonistic, you're trying to make them do stuff and they're trying not to, and it's that darn dog thing, all right, then nothing's going to happen. If, on the other hand, you find out about that dog, find out about what their attention span is, you can increase their attention span. It starts out almost nothing, and that has to be developed. So be aware that I must have this dog's attention, not because he's giving it to me. It's because that's the way it is between us, and I expect it to be there all the time. That's a thing that has to be taught before your communication works, so that when you say something, hear, sit, whatever it is, when you say something, it means something to the dog. Just like in their world. If they hear the alpha dog growling, their attention is on that. And their response is going to be whatever is appropriate when the alpha dog is growling. Now, I'm not talking about a fear thing here with people. But if you teach them, when I say sit, you sit. Not only do you sit, right? Like I always say, you're done. Till I say something else. So when you interact with a dog, and this is one I run into very much outside of the hunting dog world. Well, it's here too, but it's kind of not the cool thing to do here, but where there's a very large vocabulary. I got a word for this, and I got a word for this, and I got a word for this. And, you know, you're thinking you're making it very clear to the dog, but that's a little bit like being the dog bot. That's just the dog bot thing, where they have to listen to this word and then just respond. You got a living thing there that has an interest level and needs to have a reason to be making a big effort to work with you. So the more complicated you get with all this stuff, the more complication, so the more number of words or phrases you're using, and then your desire to make a lot of noise, be giving a lot of things, is making what the dog is learning uninteresting. And nobody can learn something when they are not interested. Think about school. If somebody had told me, you are going to go to school and learn how to play the violin. I love music, but I can't make music or sing or anything like that. So it's like, okay, really? I have to do that? I mean, could I force myself? Yes. Would I like it? No. Do I have any ability? Not really. And so it would be very hard for me to go to school and become a great violinist. I would not like it every single minute. Okay? But the stuff that I did go study, I believed in it. I wanted to learn it. It was important to me. I knew there was going to be a great benefit to me. And so I passed all my school stuff. I didn't flunk anything, nothing, because I was invested in it. And our animals are, we're that way, and our animals are that way. It's just because I would like you to do this, so here, I'm going to teach you. They have to have a reason to want to do this. It has to be something they want to do. And it's not doing that by boring, by being a Henry and talk, 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 and giving commands and having a lot of complication. You want them to love this as much as they possibly can, is what they have inside of them. And you don't do that by you talking a lot, being a Henry. So in communication with dogs, you have to use as minimal things as necessary, just like the wild dog pack. And if you do say something, it's important. So I see this, and I'm going to bring, now, everybody do you, right? If you're a chatter and that's all you're going to be, then that's all you're going to be, right? So, okay, make it work somehow. Just like a dog is what they are, and you can't make them be something they're not, and we're the same way. But if you have dogs performing tasks like drug-sniffing dogs, like search-and-rescue dogs, like seeing-eye dogs, dogs that are performing critical functions, right? They are not being instructed every second. They're not. They're not being talked to every second. They have to be thinking about things themselves, following through on what their natural talent and what they've been taught is, and carrying out the task. And the only time somebody intervenes with any one of those dogs is when it's significant and they need to. So every dog that does a critical thing has that kind of where their mind is focused on what they're doing, and they don't have to be instructed when they are doing it, and only are instructed when something needs to be changed or engaged or something needs to be communicated to them, right? So that makes a lot of sense, right? With these life-saving kind of dogs, that's important. It's also the best way, in my opinion, to work with every other dog in the world. It really is, because then the relationship is strong, it's clearly understood, there's mutual respect, and you guys aren't arguing or getting frustrated, either one of you. And I'm going to give an example on this stuff, and I'm going to go back to my retriever world. So whether you're a backyard retriever person, an avid hunter, a field trial or hunt test, I don't care. Whatever you are, if your dog is doing some retrieving, okay, at first they have to love it. You got to get the love part before you get all the these are the rules part. Got to give them the desire to be taught because they love what they're doing. But that's a different thing. But that's very important here because we're going to teach them. So we want them to watch whatever has been thrown or shot or whatever. You want them to watch it with complete and total focus. Total focus, right? Watch it with their eyes, staring it down, locating and exact marking, as we call it, marking where that place is, right? That's what we want. The more that we make noise with, you know, all the cues and all the stuff and all the encouragement and all the noise, I don't care what it is you're trying to communicate, you are interjecting yourself into that dog's thought stream and focus instead of not doing that and letting them focus on the task they have to carry out, right? So you want them to sit there and watch it complete 100% intensity. Again, you unless you have a dog that has learned to just totally ignore you, which is not a good thing, then you're going to be diluting that focus. So we want them to sit there and watch this thing go down. Then ultimately, we don't start this way. We want them to wait until we tell them to go. Now, we want them to wait until they hear the word on which we send them, not whatever. So if you train and do this and the first word out of your mouth is always the send, then you're going to teach them to go on the first word out of your mouth. Be aware of that. They need to be listening to the word that you have. So don't always, you know, sometimes say something else so that they learn, just wait for that word. That's the one word. That's going to be useful in so many ways. In other words, they have to think. They can't just automatically go because there was noise, right? You quit teaching them that noise is something. Noise is nothing. Only the words you say are very, very important. And then we want them to go out there, right, to where it is and hunt it up. Now there, the talent, skill, and all that stuff is what you're dealing with. Now they're coming back. So what do you know, people have been told, okay, whistle or call them or do whatever. Yes, if they aren't coming back, in other words, they're not doing what their job is out there, then tell them what to do. So then you give them whatever, your come in whistle or your here command, whatever it is, you give it to them. All right, they should have been taught that that means, oh gosh, got to get in there. You don't just keep saying it over and over. And then I always tell all of my people, when we get past that part where the dog goes out, comes back, if they're coming back, do not call them. Why would you do that? Because you want them, if you're using the come in whistle or the here, you want them, when they hear that, to believe it's really significant. If you're hammering it out while they're actually carrying out the act, it's not that significant, because you're like Henry, making all the noise all the time. I don't know if people think about that. If I blow a come in whistle with my dog, they better come in. I don't care what's happening. I don't care if they're chasing a pheasant or I don't care what they're doing. Here trumps everything, so to sit. And they've got to come in. Therefore, I don't blow the come in whistle when they're doing what I want. That would just be nagging. And so I'm not going to do that. Now, here we go. We're returning on the retrieve. Here we go. In your basic obedience, even on little guys, you should teach them as soon as they mentally can learn it, that when you return with something, you come in and sit down at my side, whatever it is you want the end to be. But for me, they come in on my left side, sit down. Done. Square with me. Not wherever they would like, right? Square with me. So if they come in and I haven't taught them, this is what you do at the end of a retrieve, which is come in and sit squarely with me. Then we got, there goes, here comes Henry again. Now we're going to be heel, heel, no, here, here's the, and you got da, 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 all these words and stuff. And I don't know what the dog is supposed to do with that. They're probably used to a lot of noise if you do that. So they kind of just endure it till it's over. Versus if they, you know, just use a single word and that needs to mean something. So when dogs don't do all this stuff I described, then you haven't taught them. And using the word more and more and more doesn't help. It dilutes and it makes stuff worse. So if you ever watch some of the truly great dog handlers running stuff, and let's say in the hunt test world, the really good ones, there's not lots of noise because they want the dog focused on the job. And they don't need to constantly tell them, okay, sit down, all right, get over, face this way, all right, now look out, okay, now stay here. Really? What, you know, do you really have to do all that? If you do, it's because you like to. It's because you like, you're kind of a little bit of a Henry. I like to talk, I like to say a lot of stuff, and it makes me feel good. Now I'm just sort of fuzzing up my dog and diminishing the level of focus and ultimately the performance probably. And so not necessary, but it's how you think about the noise that you make and how you communicate with your dog. I'm going to take it one more level and then I'll stop on this one. Dogs in the upland field. Dogs in the upland field, boy, I'll tell you, that's where the Henrys are out there just chatting away, instructing, telling them what to do, doing all the work for them because of how it makes them feel. When in fact, with a reasonably talented dog, you don't have to make any noise at all. You can already teach them what the range is, whatever that is. You can already teach them that if you call them, they have to come. You can teach them, if you like the steady thing, I don't know why anybody wouldn't, that if when something flies, they don't go. You can teach them to chase, which every upland dog on the planet should be, that when a bird flies, you don't chase it. If a bird comes up and flies, it's a wild bump. It's a hen. You can't shoot it. Dogs shouldn't chase it. You can teach all of that. And then when you go out in the upland field, you don't have to make noise. Now, the less noise you make in the upland field means the more focus your dog can have on what its job is, and that is bird location. It also keeps you, if you're hunting real birds, from driving every bird out of the field. They hear the noise and they're like, go, gone, and they're gone. So the quieter an upland hunt is, the better for keeping the bird somewhere findable, and it's also better for the dog's ability to intensely focus on their job at hand. And when you watch one of those dogs in the upland field, I don't care, flusher, pointer, whatever, you can just see that little brain just turning over, and they're assessing scent low, and they're assessing scent high, and they're double-checking on something and going, no, that was just where one ran, and all the things that they do, which is really hard to do if you're just yammering away, telling them what to do, moving them here, moving them there, like you had a dog bot, instead of this incredible machine that could be so good at this, if you just programmed it right and then let it go and do its job. So communication, our communication with dogs is huge. But we need to, I hope, do it in a way, you got to do you, but if you can alter you to be a little quieter and a little more thoughtful and only use noise when it really serves a purpose, like with the critical function dogs, only use a command, that's what I mean by noise, a sound you make, verbal, whistle, whatever it is, make sure that it is significant. And then your dog will love that because you're not nagging them constantly. You're going to lose that feeling of I'm in control of everything. That feels good, I guess, but it's not very useful in these situations. So dog communication, how your dog is best taught, and then how you use that so that everything you do is significant and there's a very clear understanding, makes them much better at what they're doing than if you don't. So I just want to throw that one out this week. I've gotten a lot of interesting questions. I'll try to get those folded into this thing, but I just kind of wanted to get that one out this week. Wish everybody the best, and I will be back next week.